from Los Angeles, California, on the MTV Podcast Network. This is North Mollywood. I'm Alex Papademos, and sitting across the table from me, a driver and a winner, Molly Lambert.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to North Mollywood.
Sitting at the other end of the table from us, Molly, Bex fanatic herself, Lily Simonson. Hey, Lily.
Hey. Everywhere. MTV, I'm out here in the freezing cold. There's snow everywhere, and I'm making tons of Bex snowmen. And I'm going to keep making them until you come and get me and take me to Bex himself. Come before they melt. Hurry.
Lily is my friend.
Yeah, hi.
And she was also Bex fanatic on an episode of MTV's Fanatic from the year 2000, right when Midnight Vultures was coming out.
Yeah.
And we thought it would be fun to have Lily on to talk about what the experience was like of being on MTV's Fanatic, a show that some of you may remember where they would dispense super fans of artists to go meet them. Usually it went well.
Did it go badly? Were there times when it went badly?
I feel like some of them were more awkward than others.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, because you're like pairing an ordinary, not even ordinary, extreme goober with like a professional, you know, interviewee who's like used to chatting on television. So
I was saying, though, when we watched the episode yesterday, Lily and I rewatched her Fanatic episode
for the first time. Just kidding.
She watched it 2 days ago. Said, when's the last time you saw this? And she said 2 days ago.
Wait, was it connected to the fact that you were going to do this, or you were just
exaggerating a little bit with the 2 days, but I definitely am still like coasting on the cultural cred I gained from being Bex fanatic like 17 years ago. It's kind of how I introduce myself to people. But no, I'm just kidding.
Is this like when you have to go around a room? I don't know how often you have this happen, but if you have to give a fact about yourself, is this the fact that you give?
Lily has a bunch of other interesting facts about herself that she might lead with.
It's been eclipsed now by like other things I've done, other like crazy things.
Lily's
I've
also
done.
A painter who lived in the Antarctic.
Yeah.
And specializes in painting deep sea creatures.
Yeah.
And she did a residency in the Antarctic.
Yeah. And I scuba dove under the sea ice.
Yeah.
To observe
the coolest
and creatures and landscape down there. And I think.
Wait, what was the. Can I stop? Yeah. I don't want to take this away from Beck, and yet I
can. Oh,
kind
we can
of,
talk about
I
the Antarctic.
It's all related. Yeah. I realized it's all related.
When she was making the snowman, I was like, look, you have an interest in snow and art.
I know. It was so funny.
What was the craziest creature that you encountered in that world, that undersea?
There are these really beautiful things called sea angels. That's their common name. They're like a type of mollusk, and they look like tiny little angels with like wings, and they're translucent and they glow this like orangish pink inside. So that was probably my favorite thing. They're really tiny, but you can see them in the water. And then the landscape is insane because the sea ice is like neon green and gold and turquoise from like algae that grows in it.
Also, you did one of these dives in a hot dog costume.
I did wear a hot dog costume. just to sort of amuse the other people on station. But then I realized later, like, I got to kind of set a record. Like, there are a few other people that have dove in Antarctica under the ice. But have they dove in a hot dog costume? I believe I'm the first.
Let's go back to talking about what we originally brought you here for, which is Fanatic.
Yeah.
You sent in your videotape to Fanatic. You were chosen. Now meet your inspiration.
All right, it's the late 90s, I'm assuming.
Yes.
You are a teenage Beck fan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you sign up for this yourself, or did... Because the conceit of Fanatic is that you and your best friend...
The surprise is important.
Right. So was it a complete surprise, or is it... Do you do it together, and then the surprise... Like, your friend gets to surprise you with the news that you have gotten into the Fanatic program.
Yeah. Okay. Here's how it goes down. I am obsessed with Beck in high school. I... obsessively watched the show Fanatic, but and kind of imagined myself on it because it's been on for a couple seasons. But I'm like, oh, Beck would never do that show. No way. And so then cut to me on my computer reading my Beck listserv and MTV posts and is like, if you're a fan of Beck, call this number. So I called the number and then talked to the person who answered the phone for like 3 hours. Then I had like some more phone interviews with different producers. And then this is how they got the surprise in. Then they stopped contacting me. And I was like, oh, I guess they picked somebody else. I didn't hear from them for a while. And then all of a sudden I'm at school and my quote, my best friend, who is one of my best friends, surprises me in my like art classroom and pulls me into a limo. So I was surprised.
Yeah,
but,
you
like,
said that part
not
100%. Was real.
Yes. Yeah. The
that
surprise
I thought
was
for
real.
Sure that they...
They
told
actually
you was gonna happen.
Yeah, they told my parents, and my mom said that they told her if she let me know at all, they would turn around and get a different fan if they could tell I wasn't surprised. Which may or may not have been an empty threat. But anyway, it scared her straight. She didn't say anything.
So it's like Miss America. There's a runner-up biggest Beck fan in the world waiting. If you are unable to fulfill your duties to take the crown, there's this in another city, like another limo.
Totally. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So they put you in the limo, mm-hmm. and then according to the way it looks on television, they like drive you to Los Angeles from Maryland.
Yeah, you're getting out of the limo.
We drive cross-country in a limo.
In Burbank
10 days
or
later. No, they took us to the airport and then had me tell all these sort of anecdotes about Beck and, you know, how I loved him so.
You were an evangelistic Beck fan at a time when it was harder to just give somebody a record. Like now it's easy. It's like you're like, oh, check this out. But like you had to actually do the work of buying a CD. And
well, Lily was saying there's a part where she says, like, I convince all my friends to buy these Beck records because I like give them a Beck CD. And then she was like, that was probably the last time anyone ever bought a CD.
It was like early 2000.
Right.
Because then Napster came on the scene.
Right, right, right. It
and like
right after that.
That interview comment makes me cringe a little bit because I'm like, that's so doesn't make sense now.
Also, what's a CD?
What's a CD? But it was so important. Los Angeles! Los Angeles!
Oh my god! People definitely know Lily as being the number one fan of Beck. If you think Lily, you're going to think Beck because she talks about him all the time. She talks about, oh, did you see what he was wearing last night in the Music Video Awards, stuff like that. She gives people his CDs for Christmas presents. Like, I know you don't like Beck yet, but I'm going to get you into him. And everyone likes Beck after talking to Lily.
If somebody has a birthday, they're getting a Beck CD because there's no point in getting them anything else. Nothing else is worthwhile for spending your money on.
You only had a limited amount of money and you had to decide what was the mm-hmm. most important CDs mm-hmm. to spend it on. And
totally.
CDs cost an outrageous amount of money and you had to walk 5 miles in the snow to Blockbuster Music.
Uphill both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So you are taken to the beach. Or taken to a hotel first.
Taken to a hotel.
Where do they put you? Do you remember?
I don't remember. But I do know they took us to this art store that I ended up frequenting after I moved to LA many years later, Graph Aids. And they were like, they really liked that I was an artist and I made all this Beck fan art. So they were like, now draw Beck on camera. And like, we went and bought all these art supplies and I made a drawing of Beck. And
did you bring it to Beck to be like, here's my picture of you?
Yeah, it is a little disconnected from the actual conversation that there's just, let's do a craft activity on camera to demonstrate, because this is what I would be doing all the time anyways, making snow people of Beck. And
There's like a sort of format of the show where they're like, first, before you meet them, do an activity to prove your devotion as a fan. And I had to give them a list of things I wanted to do in LA that was Beck related during the like audition process. And one of them was to go to Zanku Chicken. Because Beck sings about Zanku Chicken in Deborah. And it was hilarious. We got to LA and we pulled up to a Zancud chicken, and the producers went inside, and then they came back out, and they were like, we can't let you eat here.
which Zancud was it?
I don't know which Zancud it was.
Well, there's different ones that are, there's some that are cleaner than others.
No, they're all delicious.
They're all delicious, but there are some that are like aesthetically kind of, the grubbier ones are my favorite, like the one sort of on Sunset, like further from Arclight. The one by DGA looks like a Boston Market, but it's not actually that. It's not as good as the slimy one.
Yeah, I'll have everybody know that once I got back to LA under my own volition, I immediately went on a pilgrimage and have been back many times to Zancud. So,
but I like that they scouted out Zancud and were like,
I know, they're like, no, it's a liability. instead I drew back, which is probably way more entertaining than like watching me eat hummus and chicken.
No, I wish they had showed you eating hummus and chicken. Would have been perfect. So instead they take you to the beach where Beck is filming the mixed business video while you're there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Midnight Vultures was out and you had already memorized everything about it.
Right, right. I had been listening to it on repeat for a few months.
And Beck took some time out of his busy music video shooting schedule to sit in a tour bus
trailer
with you and talk about being Beck.
Yeah.
And the interview as it goes on camera is sort of short. We were saying, because Lily, although she's seen the episode a lot of times, told me that she hadn't seen the full cut of the episode with the other person who's a fanatic, which is a Christina Aguilera fanatic.
Yes, Derek. Derek, who's a huge because Lily, fan.
When she originally taped it off the TV, used her video editing skills to edit it to just be her.
yeah.
Because Derek got a lot of screen time.
Christina was so deeply uncool to like my group of friends. Nobody I showed the video to wanted to like sit through that part. But now, like, she's like kind of still cool or something. Or she's I don't know. Now I'm like open minded enough. You know, I'm not
Derek
a judgy teen
cool.
anymore.
We were saying we should track down Derek.
I know.
That's the next step. Derek's video for that he submitted to Beyond Fanatic looks like something that would be in a Beck video. He's like dressed as like, he's sort of dressed
it's
as a wizard
absurdist.
Or Christina or both. And he's on a roof.
I believe he's a like, genie in a bottle.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. That's what it is. Yeah.
He's
and he's like, and he's like yelling at people in traffic to honk if you love Christina.
Yeah.
And like, it just felt like one of those things that
he
would be
great.
In like, you know,
and I felt like he got maybe a slightly longer edit because maybe Christina was a little more important to the MTV audience at that point than Beck.
Right. But also, Beck and I did have limited time because of his shoot. And then on top of that, I took up a lot of the interview asking him questions that MTV would like never air the answers to. Like we talked about this really obscure artist, Joseph Beuys. For a long time, who's like a German Fluxus artist from the 60s that we like both really liked. And then I asked him about John Waters because he was supposed to be the lead in Pecker. And
really?
That's
I did not know that.
He turned it down. Yeah. So I asked him about that. I had it as a goal to like ask him questions that no other interviewer had asked him because, of course, I had read like Every interview.
But then you were too insidery.
I think it was like, kind of outside the normal realm of MTV.
But
interviews.
I like that you remember you said you had really good journals from the time, so you remember everything that
I wrote it
up.
All down afterwards. Yeah.
What is the most musical food?
Well, we ate a lot of tangerines when we were making this record because we had a tangerine tree. So
oh, did you?
I guess, yeah.
What were some of the questions you asked back that did not make it on the air?
Oh, I asked him, so his video for Sex Laws had like kitchen appliances humping. And so I asked him what the most sensual kitchen appliance was. Which obviously, like, it's like this underage girl being like, Beck, what turns you on?
And he had a good answer, right?
He had a couple answers. First, he said a spatula, and he cited this movie Stripes, where there's like
a
seduction scene. Yeah. And then he changed his answer to a colander because he was like, oh, wait, sensual. Let me think about that more. And he said, like, a colander is sensual because you have like the water straining through.
And steam, maybe, if you're making pasta. There's also a steam element to it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good answer, I think.
Great answer.
Also a very Beck-ish
answer.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I tried to ask him, like, zany questions, you know. I was very into being zany myself. Obviously, if you're into Beck, you're into Zane.
Lily, when we were watching the episode, she was like apologizing. Like, oh, I'm just like a teenager asking, you know, these silly questions. And I was like, these are exactly the kinds of questions I ask as a supposedly professional music interviewer. Yes. And I also say awesome just as much. I'm like, cool, cool, awesome.
I mean, it's one of the worst. Yeah, one of the worst things is having to listen to yourself asking questions. It's one of the worst things about being a professional interviewer.
I once interviewed Gangsta Boo, and I was so excited to interview Gangsta Boo, and then somebody, multiple people maybe, told me that I sounded exactly like that Chris Farley SNL sketch where he interviews Paul McCartney, and it's just like, cool, you're awesome, Sir McCartney. And it was exactly like that.
Did you have any moments when you asked Gangsta Boo a stupid question and then admonished yourself for the stupidity of the question verbally?
Yes, totally.
Stupid.
That was pretty, because I was also just, I was, you know, nervous to interview somebody who I liked so much. She was so cool.
Yeah.
So I thought you did a great job.
Oh, thank you,
I thought you did
Molly.
A very professional.
Thank you.
Excellent. Good job interviewing Beck.
Did you write those questions yourself?
Yeah, most of the questions I submitted beforehand as part of my like audition process. And then they gave me two questions that they said I had to ask at the top of the interview. And there was one that was like, tell me about your new album, Midnight Vultures, and the single Sex Laws. And I was like, that's really generic and boring. And they were like, do it for Beck. It'll help him sell records. And I was like, oh, okay. Totally. I'll
anything for
Beck. Anything for Beck.
And they put both of those, the boring questions.
Yeah. In. Yeah. Because they, you know, they had to. The other one was like, tell me about the video for Mixed Business, which turned into something a little more interesting. Yeah.
Because then you got to ask him about ocean creatures.
About the ocean. They were shooting it. Yeah. Zuma Beach. And yeah, I was like, is it about lobsters? Which it wasn't, but.
But foretelling.
Yeah, foretelling.
What would become an obsession of yours.
Yeah, I was telling Molly that, like, I am not a Beck fanatic anymore, but I am still, like, a fanatic-based artist. Like, I'm a fan of all these, like, sea creatures now. And I, instead of, like, following Beck on tour, I follow, like, sea creatures around the world to, like, meet them and paint them.
You told me when I first asked you about coming on to talk about this, I said, what did they tell you when you did the interview? Did they give you any direction? And the thing you said.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They asked me, they kept being like, no fatal attraction vibe, which is hilarious because it implies that I was perhaps projecting a fatal attraction vibe.
It's an awfully specific note.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is the last time you saw Beck?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. Should we talk about my fall from Fanaticism?
No, we don't have to talk about.
Did something happen? I mean, well, now we have to.
Well,
that's always my answer to that question. Is it?
It was I would say Midnight Vultures is the last album. That was the peak, and then there was a certain period where he sort of with Sea Change, he stopped making really like dancey music, and then when he started again, he still didn't. I loved him as a performer. Like, I loved him in concert, and I loved the way he, like, I think he's one of the most amazing dancers on the planet, like almost up there with like Michael Jackson and Justin Timberlake. But then he stopped dancing and like hired a dancer, which is an interesting move, and who knows what was behind it, but that sort of took away some of the drive.
He was
for
the
me.
Best dancer in the world.
He was amazing.
And Midnight Vultures was so, I mean, I love Midnight Vultures, obviously.
So good.
It was so not what anyone else was doing at that time to make like an entire Beck Prince album.
Right, right. I love when he does like funk. I love all sorts of Beck music, obviously. But yeah, the like shift away from dancing kind of shifted me away.
And you were becoming your own person.
Yeah, yeah. You also, it coincided with like not being a teenager anymore. Mysteriously.
Well, it's weird because you do, because this show is obviously trying to fit the narrative of your Beck fandom into a very standard kind of box that I assume I've watched this show probably when it was on. I don't remember all the ones that I saw, but it seems like it's trying to fit it into a very standard sort of narrative of like, I'm a super fan, and like, no disrespect to Derek, but like, that's the classic super fandom is like, oh my God, all these songs are so great, and like, I can't believe it, and it's Christina Aguilera, and I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
But like, it seems more like it, like the backstory, and maybe it's just because I'm talking to you now, it seems like you were actually sort of forming an identity that could exist apart from Beck, based on the example of Beck and the example of, like, you know, that this was your encounter with a sort of, you know, your chance encounter with a very strange artistic persona within the realm of pop music.
Yeah, that's really deep.
You maintained a love of Dadaism.
Yeah, it was right. And I think that his music in the 90s was super idiosyncratic. And then he evolved to a point where he was just trying to make really beautiful music. And I respect that a lot, but there wasn't the like sort of personal connection where I felt like our interests aligned or our taste was aligning.
It wasn't so much that sort of like digging through the junk.
Yeah.
And
gluing
it all together.
Right. It was more like he became more of a more pro kind of. Yeah.
As happens to people.
Yeah. As you've been doing something for like 20 years, you get really good at it. And it's not the same as when you're like 22 and just like experimenting.
No one, I can't hang out with anybody who thinks Sea Change is better than Midnight Vultures. And I feel like that's a thing. That's
Look, they do different things.
All right. But I think I'm just saying there's
and
something about it.
And this is the last North Mollywood episode.
This is our final episode. That's the conflict. It's like, well, that's how it ends.
I'm glad you feel me, because a lot of people, like, I get sort of flack for not loving Sea Change because it is such a beautiful album. And they're like, oh, you just don't understand heartbreak and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's just a different genre almost. I mean, it's totally a different genre, but it felt like a different persona.
It was an
getting
earnest
expressed.
Album.
Yeah.
And that was not ever the thing you associated with Beck. Was
right.
Not earnest.
Right. And I think he got really sick of being called like ironic.
Yeah, of course.
Because his music was so much more than that. And it was sincere.
Well, I remember there was like a spin list that was like the top one hit wonders. And they put Beck on there for loser, even though they were like, we know he's not a one hit wonder. But like, couldn't he have been, because this song is such a good weird one-off?
Yeah,
that would be weird. It's a weird thought experiment, like, what if he just went away after that? Like, if he just was, you know, if he was the Buggles or something, and like,
hey,
know.
The Buggles have a deep discography.
Right. This is the last North Mollywood.
Trevor Horn fanatic over here, just saying.
No, that's true. He went on to that's
he
fine.
Did every he made the Mr. 80s. He Sorry. Did. Now we shouldn't. I just always, it ends with me being like, Trevor Horn should work with Beck.
All roads do lead back to Trevor Horn.
They should make some.
Just big, like those big, this wet gated
Yeah, those
drum
wet
sounds,
drums. Like, oh, I love those wet drums.
Yeah.
80s drums.
Drums in a wind tunnel.
Well, Lily.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, sure.
How long is your show of paintings up?
Oh, well, it comes down May 29th, which might be.
In the past when this
in
airs?
In the past. But yeah, you can always check me out on the interwebs, lilysimonson.com.
Thank you very much for coming by.
Oh yeah, thank you for having me. It was great walking down memory lane.
This episode of North Mollywood was produced by Michael Catano and Mukta Mohan for the MTV Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at MTV News and at MTV Podcasts. You can subscribe to this and other MTV podcasts on iTunes.